Welcome back to Gossip Without Prejudice. My name is John. Lindsay's name is Lindsay.
Hello.
It is another fine week. We are still blowing up on TikTok. There are now just shy of 10,000 of you, and we only recorded previously like a handful of days ago. We are so sorry for not posting more. We have a whole bunch of footage, but we're hitting a bottleneck in our editing pipeline. So if you are a video editor, please reach out. Ooh. Yeah, we very much want to do more social clips, do more of the show.
Yeah, we're having so much fun with this.
Yes. Lindsay, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. This is so exciting. I'm really excited to cover this topic today. I'm so curious. There's so much to learn. We're going to cover the arrest of Judge Dugan in Milwaukee. And I'm really, really curious about the legal precedent behind this case.
Yeah, so for those of you who do not know, in April, the Trump administration, the Trump FBI specifically, arrested, and the Trump DOJ under Pam Bondi charged Milwaukee Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan with two federal statute violations that we will get into the details of. Mm-hmm. And we figured this was the time to break this down, talk about why this is significant, and more importantly, why, in my opinion, for reasons that I hope to support over this podcast, these charges are both politically dangerous and bogus. Mm. Lindsay, how much do you know about what went on here?
I think I've got a generally a pretty good idea. So Judge Dugan was trying a man on charges of domestic battery. Apparently he'd beaten up a couple of roommates over some loud music dispute.
Allegedly.
And he illegally immigrated into this country a number of years ago. And so ICE came and attempted to arrest this man during his battery trial. And Judge Dugan stopped ICE, or at least tried to.
Well, here is the breakdown. You're correct. On April 18th, I'll just jump right into it. I'll give us a factual background, and then we can sit down to discuss. On April 18th, 2025, U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, issued an arrest warrant for one Eduardo Flores Ruiz, a 30-year-old undocumented immigrant from Mexico accused of misdemeanor battery over altercation with his his roommates, who was set to appear in court on April 18th before Dugan on charges of battery and domestic abuse. That's all correct. It was not a trial. It was just a hearing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but
got it.
For the prospect of the analysis here, it doesn't really matter whether or not it was a hearing. Yeah, he was appearing in court. That's what's important. Since 2019, listeners should know, a federal policy exists for ICE to refrain from making routine arrests at courthouses. And according to an affidavit filed by FBI agent in support of criminal complaint against her, Dugan was described as angry when she learned ICE agents were waiting outside her courtroom to arrest Flores Ruiz. We will talk about why Judge Dugan was so angry. But when she realized there were ICE agents outside her courtroom who had appeared by checking the public record and seeing when this guy was going to appear before her, she got rather agitated. She questioned the agents in the hallway, like she went out in her robes herself, and asked whether they had a judicial warrant. They informed her they had an administrative warrant to detain Flores Ruiz. Dugan told the agents they needed a judicial warrant, not an administrative warrant, and she directed them to speak to Chief Judge Carl Ashley. She then returned to her courtroom. So what the media and a lot of people are getting wrong here is the critical distinction between an administrative warrant and a judicial warrant.
Yeah, this is something I'm particularly curious about. Yeah,
judicial warrants, which everyone thinks this was, they're warrants that permit law enforcement to enter private spaces, such as residence, offices, homes, things like that. They authorize searches, seizures. They can do a variety of things. In this case, it was an arrest. Law enforcement must demonstrate probable cause to get a judicial warrant. That's what's important, which probable cause is reasonable basis for a crime or when evidence of the same is present, like reasonably calculated to find evidence. If a warrant is granted, they have to go to the judiciary anytime they want to search a place or, you know, break the privacy seal on a home or domicile. They have to go and get judicial confirmation. That's one of the checks on the executive branch.
Beautiful.
That's what a judicial warrant is, right? That's why they have to show you the warrant at the door. It has to match your address. It has to have the judge's signature, and it has to specify specifically what they are authorized to search.
Ah, okay. Good to know.
An administrative warrant, which is what ICE admits and does not dispute they had here, in this immigration context, mm-hmm. Is issued by hearing officers with various executive branch agencies, in this case, ICE. They are not, as I have said so many times on this show, immigration judges are not judges. They are not Article III judicial officers. Administrative warrants generally only permit arrests or seizures in public places. They do not cross the private barrier.
Okay.
Here, ICE agents do not need probable cause to get an administrative warrant. It's actually quite controversial. They don't have to show hardly any burden of proof to get an administrative warrant from ICE. Note that a warrant signed by an immigration judge is, even if it's signed by an immigration judge, still not a judicial warrant.
Okay, because they're technically not a judicial judge.
Yeah. Further, critically, judicial warrants do not mandate assistance from any other branches.
Ah.
So part of the power of a warrant, be it or a search warrant or whatever, a warrant of arrest from a judicial officer, is that they empower action on, or compel action on behalf of other agencies, generally speaking.
Sure.
Administrative warrants do not do that.
Okay.
So they can waive whatever administrative warrant in anyone's face, generally speaking, and there's technically no compulsion to assist.
Okay, that's interesting. That's mm-hmm. totally new information to me. So technically speaking, that means Judge Dugan had no obligation to help these ICE agents get their man.
On the face, but additionally, we'll get to more why.
Okay.
So where we are in this story, I just want to make sure everyone's with me.
Mm-hmm.
ICE agent showed up. Judge Dugan and her clerk realized that these ICE agents were here. They went and talked to them in the hallway. Do you have a judicial warrant? Because the courtroom is considered a private space.
Ah.
The hallway is a public space.
Ugh.
Right?
So complicated.
Yes. So that's why everyone's like, that's why what's so dangerous about the Trump administration spin is that this distinction is not being made.
Okay.
So according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, when Chief Milwaukee County Circuit Judge Carl Ashley, mm-hmm. there we go, Carl Ashley, notified Dugan of this warrant via email. Basically, they went and talked to the chief judge. There were several officers there. Dugan responded by saying, quote, a warrant was not presented in the hallway on the sixth floor. Right. Properly, a warrant is all warrants are judicial warrants. We've just started calling administrative warrants warrants. They're not really warrants. They're not issued by Article III courts. So Dugan is like, these guys can't. They don't have a judicial warrant to come into my courtroom.
I see.
After Dugan returned to her courtroom, instead of holding the hearing because Flores Ruiz was on her docket, she directed him and his attorney to leave using the jury exit room, the jury exit door to the public hallway. So this alternate exit did lead through like a private, like back room hallway,
okay.
but it only opened back into the straight back into the public hall.
I see.
So back into the public space. Where she and the agents had initially spoken. It just took them out into the hallway exactly back where they were more or less expecting him. Flores Ruiz and his attorney entered into an elevator in which an agent also entered. So there was actually one agent that hadn't been recognized as an ICE agent and followed him into the elevator.
There it is.
Now, interestingly, rather than arresting Flores Ruiz in the elevator,
mm-hmm.
who the officers knew was unarmed at this point,
okay.
There on the sixth floor, one of the agent rode the elevator down with him and his attorney and alerted the other agents that, like, hey, this guy's on the move. Mm-hmm. Four of them convened outside the courthouse and chased him down the street and arrested him just 22 minutes after he entered into Judge Dugan's courtroom at 8:43 a.m.
Wow, that is a short timeline.
Yeah, it's a very short timeline. And what's critical is Judge talked to the ICE agents, told this guy and his attorney to leave, here's the door, and it goes right back out into the public hallway where ICE had eyes on him the whole time.
Yeah, and had, again, free access to him.
Remember, administrative warrants only permit arrests in public spaces. The courtroom hallways are public spaces. However, a courtroom, generally speaking, be there a state or federal judge, is a judge's kingdom. It's a private, for these purposes here, it's a private space.
Wow, that's surprisingly convoluted, but I mean, it makes sense in practice. If she had just said to Flores Ruiz, just stay in my courtroom for the rest of the day, I wonder if that would have been more effective for him escaping ICE in the long run, but whatever.
Yes, well, there was quite a frenzy here, and the Department of Justice has now charged Judge Dugan with two separate crimes. Mm. Title 18, United States Code, Section 1505, obstructing or impeding a proceeding before a department or agency of the United States. 5 years imprisonment and $250,000 fine.
That's a lot of money.
Up to. The elements of the offense for 18 U.S.C. 1505... require the government to prove, and I've broken out the elements in layman's terms. We're going to put the actual section code in the show notes, but it's much more convoluted. Mm. It requires them to prove, one, existence of an investigative proceeding. There is or was an ongoing proceeding, inquiry, investigation before a federal department, agency, or any committee of Congress.
Okay.
Two, that the defendant knew of the pending proceeding.
Mm.
Three, that the obstructive action, like the defendant engaged in one or more of the obstructive actions outlined in the statute, such as withholding or falsifying documents or using threats or force. Mm. And corrupt intent, Judge Dugan did so with corrupt intent, meaning the actions were taken with a wrongful purpose to disrupt, impede, or influence the proceedings. Ironically, quick aside, many January 6th defendants were charged with obstruction of an official proceeding under this statute.
Ah.
And, fun fact, the Supreme Court has also made it harder to charge people under Section 1505 in recent years. See Fisher v. United States 235572, U.S. June 28th, 2024. Here, the indictment before Judge Dugan does not allege corruption in any clear way or any threats. The complaint does not allege Dugan was violent. She was acting well within her authority to protect the integrity of her courtroom. Additionally, if she was attempting to help Flores Ruiz, a man she had never met before and no commitment, you know, too, she was helping him evade law enforcement, why did she send him out a door she knew only went right back into the public hallway where they were waiting? Further, per Prince v. United States, P-R-I-N-T-Z, 521 U.S. 898, 1997, the federal government cannot compel state officials to enforce federal laws or administer federal regulatory programs.
Ah.
So here's the part where I'm going to specify that this is a state judge, a state circuit judge. Under the rules of federalism, which sounds very scary, federalism is actually a power-sharing agreement. If we did not have a federalist government, the federal government would control everything.
Sure.
But we have a federalist government, so we have independent state governments, which include independent state judiciaries.
Okay.
And that means Judge Dugan was a state employee who still had the sovereignty over her courtroom to defend the orderly proceedings of her docket.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Judge Dugan, who my guess, we'll get more into this later, was just trying to like not have an altercation between 4 to 6 law enforcement officers and some random guy when she still had a full calendar to deal with.
Yeah.
And they did not have a warrant with them when they tried to show up with no notice. They didn't. They didn't alert the judicial security. They didn't tell the chief judge before they showed up.
And you said one of the conditions is that they need to know about it.
Yeah. Well, she did know about it.
Yeah. She just didn't have any advance notice, but that's not necessarily relevant.
Yeah, but that's not necessary. And okay. if it fails most weakly, it obstructive action and intent, right?
Obstructive action and intent. How can we prove that she had the intent to shield this man from ICE when, in fact, she just sent him through a hallway that would have
sent her right back to ICE
anyways.
Yeah, right, and then nowhere else. And more importantly, remember the criminal standard is beyond a reasonable doubt.
Uh-huh.
So it's not featherweight preponderance of the evidence.
Sure.
This is a very high standard, and you have to convince an entire jury that of people in, presumably, in Wisconsin, depending on where they convene this, that one of their judges was somehow a corrupt mastermind hiding immigrants in her basement, which is the narrative the Trump administration wants to push. Are you with me so far?
I'm totally with you. And it's really interesting to me. I assumed that the government's allegations here had weight to them. But this is a colander. This is not a bowl. This is a colander where there's holes and things will fall through.
So I should also add that it is absolutely not normal for federal agents to do this. And I know law enforcement would have never done this in a federal courthouse. They would have never done this in a federal courthouse. Mm. If the federal judiciary felt that the executive branch law enforcement was exploiting their public calendars to pursue whatever agenda they needed and disrupting their regular operations. Remember that the executive branch needs judicial approval for wiretaps, search warrants, arrest warrants, and they need help from the judiciary for all sorts of things to do their job. It's part of the checks and balances. You can't upset the federal judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
Here, ICE agents didn't tell the chief judge they were coming. They didn't alert court security or the police ahead of time. They just showed up.
Wow.
And part part of what's so upsetting here is that sanctuary, the concept of sanctuary cities was actually proposed back in the early 2000s by law enforcement.
Ah.
Because one of the problems law enforcement everywhere were having, especially in like immigrant heavy communities, mm-hmm. is that no one would report a crime or talk to local police if they knew all their information was going to be turned over to federal law enforcement and or their families or like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the local police were having an enormous problem getting witnesses and solving crimes because no one in the local communities was cooperating.
Wow.
And we have forgotten what happened. We've been under sort of that sort of tacit policy in many urban centers for such a long time that we've forgotten what that status quo was like.
Yeah. Wow.
If you know, you could get arrested at your judicial hearing that you're required to show up for, why would you show up?
Absolutely.
And so this is actually one of the examples of the Trump administration arresting someone who was already cooperating with the system. Now, he was a bad guy, and I think he should be thrown out of the country, but I'm not standing up for the man. I'm standing up for his rights and for the process.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm glad that the judiciary had his hooks in him and we're probably going to deal with him appropriately. But this is very poorly handled. This is not normal for the Trump administration to do. And that was just the first charge.
Oh, Lord Almighty.
What's so tough is that like the distinction between judicial and administrative warrants is not explained by the Trump administration in their many press releases.
Oh, so they're not even addressing the key, delicate parts of this situation.
Yes.
Here.
And so the second charge is Title 18 United States Code Section 1071, concealing an individual to prevent his discovery and arrest, up to 1 year imprisonment and $100,000 fine.
Hmm.
The elements are a little simpler.
Okay.
It's one, a federal warrant had been issued for the person's arrest.
Yep.
Two, the person concealed them, knew that a warrant was issued. The person that actually concealed the fugitive, you know, the person actually like concealed them.
Mm-hmm.
They knew and did it. And the person acted with intent to prevent the fugitive's discovery or arrest.
Okay.
So those are the four general elements. Now, first, I cannot find any information that says an administrative warrant even counts towards the first element.
Yeah, 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 yeah. You said a federal warrant.
Yes,
and
a federal warrant.
And it's an administrative,
warrant.
Wow, okay.
It's not actually clear whether an administrative warrant even applies.
God damn it.
Now, that will probably be in controversy.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe it will be. I think I can't opine one way or another. But you should know that it is not a foregone conclusion that this even counts just on the first element.
Wow.
Second element, the person concealed them, knew that a warrant was issued, again, tethers back to whether or not administrative warrant counts for the purposes of Section 1071.
Mm-hmm.
And third, the person actually concealed the fugitive from law enforcement. Now, is sending a man out a door into a public public hallway concealment?
That's interesting.
Could you convince a jury beyond a reasonable doubt? I mean,
you would have a really tough time convincing beyond a reasonable doubt.
A
with
judge,
that high
no less.
Of a standard?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the last person, the person acted with intent to prevent the fugitive's discovery. So even if you concealed him by way of sending him out this hallway, you also have to prove that that was the intended consequence.
Mm, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
to stop him from being arrested. And
so
maybe
according,
that wasn't the intent at all.
Yeah. So. According to ICE themselves, I have a lot more of analysis here because like the first one was a little more cut and dry.
Mm.
All they had was an administrative warrant. Like, that's in the government's pleadings, which, again, may not qualify as a federal warrant as defined by the first element. But for obstruction, it will be contested whether an immigration removal also counts as an investigative proceeding.
Ah.
Because, again, not Article 3.
Interesting.
For concealment, it will be contested whether administrative warrant qualifies and whether directing Flores Ruiz out of a specific door to the very same public hallway where the officers planned to arrest him and had a chance to arrest him amounts to concealment. Because remember, they had eyes on the guy the whole time.
Yeah, wow.
It was maybe like a 10-second
window. Yeah, while he was going through the private hallway. That's it.
Yeah, so it speaks to mens rea, which is the guilty mind. I don't know why the fuck we don't just say guilty mind. We just love words.
We love Latin.
Both knowing about a warrant or process had been issued for the person and the arrest, and that Judge Dugan intended to prevent the fugitive discovery is not at all clear from the factual record. So per USB, I actually don't know how to pronounce this, but USV Bissonnette, Bissonnette, 586, Federal Reporter, 2nd edition, 73, 78, 8th Circuit, 1978. We'll put these citations in the show notes.
Always.
The statute does not require that the defendant had a specific intent to prevent that defendant's arrest forever.
Okay.
So it's only a specific time
It only has to happen once. It doesn't have to be indefinite.
Or I say the timeline isn't indefinite. So like you have to prove in that very moment, just because did something later to possibly, like, it's, they can't be interpreted expansively.
Okay,
we don't have time to get into the analysis of this.
Yeah, that's we could talk about that for hours, I think.
But very basically, it's going to be really tough to fit this box into this analysis.
I see.
Judge Dugan, I'm going to read from the complaint, quote, Judge Dugan and Judge A, which is just another judge that was involved in this, who was not being charged, who were both wearing judicial robes. I don't know why they needed that
detail.
Yeah,
why does that matter?
Approached members of the arrest team in the public hallway. Judge A's courtroom is located adjacent to Judge Dugan's courtroom. Witnesses uniformly reported that Judge Dugan was visibly upset and had a confrontational, angry demeanor. Judge Dugan addressed Deportation Officer A and asked if Deportation Officer A was present for a court appearance. When Deportation Officer A responded no, Judge Dugan stated that Officer A would need to leave the courthouse. Officer A stated that Officer A was there to effectuate an arrest. Judge Dugan asked if Deportation Officer A had a judicial warrant, and Deportation Officer A responded, no, I have an administrative warrant. Judge Dugan stated that Officer A needed a judicial one. Deportation Officer A told Judge Dugan that Deportation Officer A was in a public space and had a valid immigration warrant. Judge Dugan asked to see if the administrative warrant applied, and Deportation Officer A offered it to show her. Judge Dugan then demanded that Officer A speak with the chief judge. Judge Dugan then had a similar interaction with FBI Agent B and CPB Officer A after finding out that they were not present for a court appearance and that they were with ICE. Judge Dugan ordered them to report to the chief judge's office.
Okay.
So what happened is they showed up, and she was just like, go talk to the chief judge.
Yeah,
we're rather upset here. It's up for interpretation because the entire question of the case hinges on Judge Dugan's intent. Now, the only clear evidence cited by the government that things were a little wonky was that Judge Dugan was mad.
which is perfectly understandable. Yeah,
but judges get mad for all sorts of shit all the time.
Yeah, that's nothing new.
Like, for example, if federal agents showed up at your courtroom without prior notice to attempt to apprehend a man with an alleged history of violence in the middle of the working day.
Who you're currently trying to work with and figure out.
She has an absolute interest in maintaining order in her courtroom and sending him back out into the public space in a way that she knew wouldn't make a fight in the doorway is well within her authority. So I empathize with that interpretation. They could say she's mad, therefore she's trying to hide him, I guess.
But
I don't know.
There's no way that you could argue that logically and convince a jury.
The only serious, most incriminating piece of evidence is a remark by the courtroom deputy, the most serious evidence against Dugan. Quote, second, according to the courtroom deputy, only deputies, juries, and court staff and in-custody defendants being escorted by deputies used the back jury door. Defense attorneys and defendants who were not in custody never used the jury door. So basically, it was an irregular procedure if this deputy's testimony is correct. And that is in the complaint.
Okay. But that's thin.
That's very thin. I will acknowledge it's not a good look. However, it should be noted that the chief judge was at this time currently writing a policy on how to handle such situations when immigration enforcement officers showed up in state courts.
Well, if only he'd completed it the day before.
Yes, quoting from the complaint, quote, the chief judge emphasized that such arrest actions should not take place in courtrooms or other private locations within the building. Deportation Officer A, hearing a lot from him, asked about whether enforcement actions should take place in the hallway. The chief judge indicated that hallways are public areas. So the chief judge actually had no comment on whether or not they should. He just said, it's a public area.
That's all I got for you.
That being said, the chief judge is probably not happy that they're in the hallways because that will have a tremendous chilling effect on whether or not people show up for their hearings.
That's for sure, which is unacceptable.
So how are you with me so far?
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay. And at this point, I'm curious, we talked at the beginning of some states have laws explicitly forbidding this. Does Wisconsin have anything like that?
So they can't have a law forbidding it.
Okay.
So under federalism, states cannot be compelled to assist.
Cannot be compelled to exist.
They can assist voluntarily.
I see.
And you see some states like Texas doing that, but they can't be compelled to.
Okay.
That being said, they also can't substitute their authority for the federal government. So
can't supersede.
Yes, they can't supersede the federal government, and therefore they can't pass laws saying state law enforcement can stop them.
Okay.
So the states just can't have the option of not assisting.
I see.
And they can't actively impede.
Okay.
So
the question here really comes down to whether or not Judge Dugan was actively, intentfully impeding ICE from arresting this
man. So both charges will pivot on Judge Dugan's intent, just like you said, whether she had corrupt intent and the intent of helping him evade arrest entirely, both of which questions are not clear, in my opinion, to the satisfaction of a criminal standard, or whether she wanted to protect the sanctity of her own courtroom, because she's just going to say, hey, look, I'm a state employee.
Yeah.
I am under no obligation to assist federal law enforcement, and I have a vested interest in maintaining safety in my courtroom.
Yeah. I think her defense to me at this point seems sounder than the argument against her.
Yeah. Acts in state courtrooms are generally outside the purview of federal officers.
Okay. There you go, folks.
But again, it really should be acknowledged, Judge Dugan, I think, made a tactical optical mistake. The non-regular door exit, if that allegation is true, is a pretty bad.
That's one of the biggest holes.
Well, not a hole. It's just a bad look.
Yeah.
Because she still has the authority to send him out whatever door she wants. But I think for the PR battle, I think that's a bad look.
I agree.
Reasonable minds can differ, but what bothers me is like the seismic implications of just arresting a judge at all, because the biggest problems I have with the situation aren't actually the criminal charges at all, right? The implications for federalism, the politics of norms, are huge, because this sort of smells of retaliation and compliance punishment. Mm-hmm. Because when judges have been punished in the past, they have not been frog marched in front of the cameras. And we'll get to more about another case here shortly. But I wanted to wrap up this conversation. I want to say and caveat and say there are several key witnesses that have not yet been interviewed, or if they have, their testimony was not included in the complaint. The FBI didn't appear to ask Flores Ruiz's attorney for what happened, about whether Flores Ruiz himself and whether Judge Dugan alerted them that ICE was there to arrest him. There's actually no clear connection between
very,
that.
Very important testimony.
And some of their behaviors is inconsistent with having any warning, because like, they just calmly walked out the door and they were headed, best we can tell, for the street and not for like a closet somewhere to hide. Huh. And we don't even know whether Flores Ruiz's attorney drove to the courthouse. If not, she would know well to take the elevator that went to street level, which they did. They took the elevator with an ICE agent, and they were all arrested at ground floor almost immediately. Huh. And so there's a whole, and the Chief Justice isn't in this complaint either.
Wow.
And what the Chief Justice knows might be pertinent. So it's not clear if there are more operative facts or if there are more witnesses that have not yet been included here that may change the analysis. But with what information we have, these charges are both extremely flimsy. In my opinion, sorry, let me just make sure I get the citation right. 1071, concealing an individual to prevent his discovery and arrest. That's the flimsier of the two, but both of them are paper tigers.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger damage here is the media frenzy, that deliberate media frenzy that followed Judge Dugan's arrest.
Yeah, so, this has been chaotic.
Yeah, when the FBI arrested Judge Dugan at the courthouse amid,
that would look
like
bad.
In front of cameras.
If I were her, I'd be so fucking angry.
Yeah, there's a deliberate showpiece, up to including FBI Director Kash Patel posting a picture of the Judge Dugan's arrest in violation of DOJ guidelines designed to prevent prejudice of charged individuals.
Yeah, you're not supposed to post a picture of someone who's charged unless it has real legal precedence, right?
Yeah.
So he posted a picture of her.
FBI Director Kash Patel initially put out a gloating tweet, quote, "Just now, FBI arrested Judge Hannah Dugan out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin on charges of obstruction after evidence of Judge Dugan obstructing an immigration arrest operation last week. We believe Judge Dugan intentionally misdirected federal agents away from the subject to be arrested in her courthouse, Eduardo Flores Ruiz, allowing the subject, an illegal alien, to evade arrest. Thankfully, our agents chased the perp down on foot, and he's been in custody since. But the judge's obstruction created increased danger to the public. We will have more to share soon. Excellent work at FBI Milwaukee." So this tweet actually went out, and then it was deleted, I think, within an hour.
Good.
And Pam Bondi also sort of, they launched a media offensive, and then they took it down really quickly because I think they were realizing their claim.
Oh, shit.
It didn't look as good as they thought it felt.
Yeah. They thought they had a nice, fresh, beautiful sword to wield, but in fact, it was pretty rusty.
They got really significant pushback on this, even from pro-Trump commentators.
Good.
And further, FBI, the civil rules that the FBI tweets, comments by Pam Bondi, arguably violate 1-7610, which prohibit photography of defendants that prejudice judicial proceedings. Because you don't want, to perp walk someone in front of the media and then have a jury trial of their peers who have seen all the media coverage. Yeah. So finding an unbiased jury can actually be really difficult in high-profile cases.
I believe it.
You'd have to basically just get Luddites who don't have phones, which yeah. is particularly difficult these days in the age of direct media.
Extremely difficult.
And so it's sort of cutting against the spirit of the judicial system on top of the flimsiness of the charges. You're not supposed to make huge fanfare about ongoing criminal charges or investigations. Now, note that Judge Dale Ho already found that Pam Bondi's public comments about the Eric Adams case likely violated local rules when they did something like this similarly.
Nice.
Eric Adams, mayor of New York, huge corruption charges, dismissed as a favor from the Trump administration. The Trump administration wanted the charges dismissed without prejudice. Judge Ho dismissed them with prejudice, so which isn't exactly a victory, but it means that the Trump administration can't keep Eric Adams under their thumb to do their bidding and then just refile the charges later if he ever falls out of line.
That's great.
So judges have previously in high-profile indictment cases have said media communications matter. Mm-hmm. We should go over the Eric Adams case at another date.
Yeah, absolutely. Let us know if you'd be interested in that, folks.
Yeah. In the aftermath of this whole arrest, because this just happened like a couple weeks ago, yeah. So it's very fresh and there's not yet a trial date set, I don't think. Mm-hmm. She was removed from the bench on April 29th.
Okay.
She was removed from the bench. In Ray Dugan's Supreme Court administrative order on April 29th, issued from the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. I'm going to read the quote. It's a very short order. Quote, the court has learned that Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Judge Hannah C. Dugan has been charged with two federal criminal offenses, one of which is a felony and one of which is a misdemeanor. This court is charged in the Wisconsin Constitution with exercising, superintending, and administrative authority over the courts of this state. In exercise of that constitutional authority and in order to uphold the public's confidence in the courts of this state during the pendency of the criminal proceedings against Judge Dugan, we conclude on our own motion, which means sua sponte, on their own, that it is in the public interest that she be temporarily relieved from her official duties. Accordingly, it is ordered in the exercise of the court's superintending administrative authority over all courts of the state that Milwaukee County Circuit Court County Judge Hannah C. Dugan is temporarily prohibited from exercising the powers of a circuit court judge in the state of Wisconsin.
You know, that jives. That makes sense. Yeah. I think if a judge is under investigation for a crime, they should not be able to make decisions that impact the entire country potentially.
Yeah.
But it sucks for her. Well, I don't know. It's just such an unfortunate position to find yourself in. She must feel powerless and frustrated.
Yes. And I agree. I think poor Hannah here has gotten caught in the crossfire of a political investigation.
Yeah, agreed.
But I also agree that she needs to be pulled from the bench immediately as soon as the Supreme Court learns of pending charges. Yeah. She has not been ethically reprimanded. She's just been placed on administrative hold.
I think that's
a valid perspective to take.
Though
here, this is a state circuit court judge. So her rulings only impact of the bounds of a state, but
for sure.
But still, the public's confidence needs to be upheld. If it was a different judge doing different things, I would support their suspension until pending, the merits of the issues.
Yeah, I agreed. I wonder if it's paid suspension or not. Just curious.
That varies state by state. Like every state has judicial ethics, judicial ethics bodies of some kind. Some have panels, some have an office attached to the Supreme Court. But one way or another, all their authority flows from the Supreme Court of each state because that's who regulates each state bar. Mm. And funnily enough, we have generally speaking, no federal bar. Like you only get admitted at the local jurisdiction level. So you can get admitted in the state of Washington, in Washington, D.C., in Massachusetts, in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. There's no independent you can get federal admission, but it all flows from your state admission.
I see.
Generally speaking. And I wanted to take this opportunity to also contrast this with another judge.
Yeah, I love this. I'm excited to hear about this.
There's another judge back in 2018, if some of you may recall, who got in remarkably similar trouble with the Trump administration for a remarkably similar circumstance. I want to contrast why these two cases are so different and also why I also support the second judge's charges, because this is very different. So For those of you who may remember, on March 30th, 2018, Jose Medina Perez, a 30-year-old undocumented immigrant from the Dominican Republic, was arrested for narcotics possession in Newton, Massachusetts, which has been a sanctuary city since 2017, which basically means, I don't like the way media portrays this, but sanctuary city just means you don't help or impede federal law. It's not like an action you take.
Okay.
Quote, he was also thought to be the subject of a drunk driving warrant issued in Pennsylvania after his fingerprints were found to match those of someone deported from the U.S. twice in 2003 and 2007 and barred from reentry in the United States until 2027. Mm. So this is back in 2018 and he was banned for like 10 years.
Wow.
So this was not a good guy.
Yeah, this is different.
Yeah. So but far. Again, that makes no bearing on exercise of his constitutional rights or the good functioning of the system. I just want to point that out.
I see.
On April 2nd, 2018, Medina Perez was brought to the Newton District Court. So this is a state district court level. According to the indictment, at 9:30 a.m., an ICE officer arrived to observe the hearing and detain Medina Perez if he were released. So it was like a bail hearing, I think, and they showed up to, like, if the state system let him go, they were going to grab him immediately. Mm. Now, Medina Perez's hearing began at 2:48 p.m. in the evening with Massachusetts State District Court Judge Shelley Richmond Joseph,
okay,
a former assistant attorney general and criminal defense attorney, presiding.
Experienced.
Joseph had the clerk ask the ICE officer to leave the courtroom and wait in the lobby. So a similar remarkable reaction, like, guys, like,
I don't like that you're here.
Yeah, you got to be in public places or you got to coordinate with me ahead of time. They just showed it. They seem to have just showed up again by all the information I can find. According to Joseph, this was in keeping with court policy at the time. According to the indictment, the ICE officer was told that Medina Perez, if released, would leave through the lobby.
Mm.
So they're like, he's going to leave through a public space.
Yep, that's... Yep,
just wait outside. We don't want...
That's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah, we don't want a physical altercation. Like,
yeah.
We don't need people getting fucking tackled by federal...
God, no.
Yeah, like, go in for your parking ticket and get attacked by ICE officers.
Christ.
It's just, it's dangerous for everybody.
Like, yeah.
And, again, chilling reaction on good judicial proceedings.
Mm.
Joseph, remember the judge, Judge Joseph, mm-hmm. held a sidebar conference with the prosecutor and Medina Perez's defense attorney. Medina Perez was eligible to be released on bail. This is a bail bond hearing. And during the sidebar conference, Medina Perez's attorney told Joseph that Medina Perez had an ICE detainer. And if they were, which is basically in this case, it's just an administrative warrant. They're just calling it a detainer. And if they were returned to the Billercia jail, Billerica, it's the local jail. Mm. If he was returned to the local jail and released from there, ICE would apprehend him.
Mm.
So basically the county jail, like, hey, judge, if you send me to the county jail, they're just going to grab him as soon as he's out. ICE would apprehend him. Joseph instructed the court clerk to deactivate the audio recorder in the courtroom.
Oh.
Allegedly in violation of Massachusetts courtroom rules and norms, the recording remained off for 52 seconds.
Ooh, that's really incriminating.
So we're already seeing some very stark differences here.
Absolutely.
Though the impulse was probably the same to begin, like, hey, we need judicial order. It's not right. And there's probably also a moral affront. Like, we don't want people getting attacked.
Yeah.
But then it's cut the cameras. That's something very different. Now, according to the indictment against Judge Joseph, the recorder was reactivated at 2:41 p.m., so they knew it should have been on, probably.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecutor asked Joseph to dismiss the fugitive warrant because Medina Perez did not resemble the mugshot of the Pennsylvania fugitive. Joseph granted the request, and the fugitive charge was dismissed.
Huh,
so they basically all conferred. The prosecutor and the defense counsel was like, okay, how do we get through this?
How do we get this guy out?
They turned the record back on and then dismissed some charges on the record. The drug possession charge did not require Medina Perez to be held in custody. So that's why they dismissed it. And it would be the subject of a pretrial conference held at a later date. Joseph ordered Medina Perez to be released.
Okay.
So they basically cut the cameras. There were no cameras. It was an audio recording. But they metaphorically, they cut the cameras, had a sidebar, turned the record back on, dismissed the charge collaboratively that would have, like, everyone, the judge, the defense counsel and prosecutor, dismissed the charge that would have had him held and then set an indefinite hearing at a later date and then released him.
Okay.
Which was the subject of the hearing they had originally come for, but it sounds like things took a significant turn. Now, Medina Perez's attorney told Joseph that Medina Perez had some property, quote, downstairs and asked for permission to speak with Medina Perez. His attorney and an interpreter went to the court's basement and lockup facility where, at 2:301 p.m., he used his security access card to open a rear exit to a public parking lot and a court official allowed Medina Perez to leave the courthouse.
Ooh, that doesn't look good.
That's completely different. So we didn't go into a public hallway.
Mm.
We went through the basement secure lockup, private spaces the whole way in the judicial sort of spheres.
Yeah.
Purview, uh-huh. And then used a court access card acquired from the judge's, mm. Joseph's clerk, and then let them out the back, literally out the back alleyway,
yeah.
into the courtroom.
It feels very different.
Into the parking lot. Yeah, there we go. According to federal prosecutors, Joseph and McGregor, which is the clerk,
okay.
They were both charged. We're talking about Joseph here, but a clerk was charged alongside her.
Okay.
Helped the defendant evade detention by allowing him to leave the courthouse through a rear exit with ICE agents waiting in the front lobby. They had told the ICE agents,
Wait for him in the front lobby.
And then they
secreted him out in the back.
Yep, exactly. A grand jury investigation began within weeks. And on April 25th, 2019, Joseph and McGregor were both indicted.
Okay.
Joseph surrendered to authorities and McGregor was arrested at home. So Joseph was the judge. McGregor was arrested at home. They both pled not guilty and were released without bail.
Okay.
So McGregor retired and Joseph is on administrative leave with pay pending trial.
Okay, still pending trial.
Yep, a motion to dismiss filed by Joseph was initially denied, and as of July 2020, no trial date had yet been set. On September 22nd, 2022, so like years past,
yeah.
The federal prosecutor overseeing the case announced that all charges against Joseph would be dismissed as part of an agreement requiring Joseph to self-refer to the Massachusetts Commission on Judicial Conduct and make certain admissions in connection with that referral.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So
we're going to drop our charges as long as you go to your power and get reprimanded.
Well,
by that body.
This is exactly why I have problems with the Dugan charge. The circumstances are shaky. The charges are bogus. The PR circus was
batshit
orchestrated. Yeah. Yeah, it was orchestrated. It was a frog march. Mm-hmm. But even on top of that, the proper way you prosecute, generally speaking, judges and other members of the bar, mm-hmm. is you go to the ethics, you go to the bar administration, you go to the judicial ethics committee, whatever your state has, you go to them,
mm-hmm.
first, at least. And then that's what happened here is they dismissed all the charges, yeah. and referred to the judicial conduct committee. Mm-hmm. And federal prosecutions of state judges are extremely rare everywhere in the United States. This was this here in Massachusetts in 2018 was the first prosecution of a sitting Massachusetts judge since, guess.
I'm going to guess 1901.
1787.
Ooh, wow.
1787 to 2018, not a single Massachusetts state judge was indicted for anything. Back in 1787, it was a judge that was prosecuted for helping rebels in Shays' Rebellion. So
oh.
It was ye old American Revolutionary stuff.
Ye old good boys.
Yeah, the case came amid escalating tensions between the first Trump administration and so-called, you know, sanctuary cities, mm-hmm. in Newton. So since 1787 to 2018 and then now.
Wow.
So we have both under the Trump administration, by the way.
Wow.
That's why I have a problem with this. There's been no judicial forwarding. There's been no, it's so strange.
It's just immediate.
And it was also strange back in 2018. I'm not claiming that the 2018 charges were regular because they weren't. It also shouldn't have been done that way back then. It should have gone straight to the Judicial Ethics Committee. And then once the Ethics Committee had its findings, that's when you charge.
Mm-hmm.
So the damage, like arresting judges in their courthouse, this is clearly combined with the fact that these charges never happen. They happen publicly and they're flimsy. The Trump administration isn't trying to necessarily win here. They're trying to send a message,
mm-hmm.
right?
It
reeks of politics in the worst way possible.
It does. It's this paper tiger stuff that you talk about all the time.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Well, and actually it's so funny. One of the reasons why I waited to do this episode until today is that the Massachusetts Judicial Conducts Commission, just this morning, as of an hour ago before recording,
ooh.
Released their first hearing date in Judge Joseph's case. The hearing will take place in courtroom 1309 in the Suffolk County Courthouse located at 3 Pemberton Square in Boston, Massachusetts. The hearing will begin with a view at the Newton District Court at 7:30 a.m. on June 9th, 2025.
Ooh. Gotta get plenty of coffee for that,
yeah.
that morning.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a month away.
7 years have passed,
yes.
since that incident.
So the judge,
wow.
has been off the bench this whole time.
Okay,
so,
well, that's good.
Yeah, to
that's
be sure.
such a long time for this event to just sit in limbo.
Yeah, so
that's
so
disappointing.
The clear differences, right? To recap,
mm-hmm.
you have both judges, wanted ICE out of their immediate courtrooms into public spaces. Mm-hmm. However, only the Massachusetts judge
Joseph
actively shepherded the fugitive mm-hmm. through non-public spaces after deliberately misdirecting or allegedly misdirecting ICE agents to a public space where they should wait for him and while they let him out the back parking mm-hmm. lot. That's unacceptable.
It's a big difference.
I think, yeah, we need to be a society of consequences. And that also means, even if we don't personally agree with him, that means complying with federal immigration regulations. Mm. Though we do badly need immigration reform in this country, that doesn't play into the analysis here. Mm. Judge Dugan is a political straw man. She's a prop. For the sin of letting a man out the wrong door, a lot of people are calling her actions illegal because they don't understand the flimsiness of the elements in the charges they filed.
Yes.
And just as importantly, they don't understand why this is so irregular. You know, because the mm-hmm. Trump administration's on Twitter going, no one's above the law.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, he's accepting, a $400 million Qatari luxury jet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, what's happening is that Qatari is donating it to the DOJ. The DOJ is giving it to Trump to use during his presidency. And then at the end of his presidency, they're donating it to his personal library, which will then allow him allegedly to continue using it as a private citizen. And all of that, as far as I can tell, tax free because it never actually falls into his possession. Yeah, because the presidential libraries are generally trusts. So,
Hate it.
Yep. So a whole bunch of weird stuff stacking up here. But I wanted to sit down and explain this to everyone, mm-hmm. Why this is so strange and why yeah. I absolutely abhor anyone who's like, Judge Dugan, yeah, is doing the wrong thing here. No, it's not. And I think people need to stand up and talk about it more. Lindsay, what's your thoughts now that we've gone over the whole thing?
I am really, really glad to hear all the details of this. It completely surprises me, but it's completely new to me just how complex this is and the flimsiness of these arguments. So I'm really glad that we've gone over this. Before we came in to record this episode today, I was just kind of generally thinking about the 14th Amendment mm-hmm. and the due process requirements. And I pulled it up for myself because I was thinking about it. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Mm-hmm. So I've just been thinking, technically, I could make an argument that what ICE was doing was obstructing the due process of law by coming to arrest this man in the courthouse before his battery thing was settled. So,
that's the frustrating thing is that, like, in federal immigration proceedings, generally speaking, your due process, like Abrego Garcia uh-huh. in El Salvador.
Ooh, what a case.
Well, what's the reason why it's so troubling is that the bar is in hell for federal immigration proceedings. It's all subject to enormous amount of discretion by the executive branch. All immigration matters generally are broad discretion by the executive branch. All of your due process is, are you this person? Are you eligible for removal? Yes, no. That's it.
Don't like it.
That's all. When everyone's saying due process, they're not calling for trials. They're just calling for a removal proceeding, which is already, in my opinion, very minimal. It's very minimal. It's like, are you this person? Can you be removed? Out you go. Yeah, exactly. That's it. There are almost no questions at federal immigration proceedings. And
don't like it.
Yeah. And the it's incredibly hard to argue. It's hard to get to make the government accountable. Let's just leave it at that. There's lots of complicated reasons why that can be a good or a bad thing, but it's just hard to hold the government accountable generally. Here, federal proceedings for removal for immigration purposes are very easy to execute. And that's also why the broad discretion of the executive branch is also why the Trump administration can cancel the visa or attempt to cancel the visa of that Tufts University student who wrote an op-ed a year ago criticizing Israel and then throw her out of Tufts University because Marco Rubio can just cancel her green card or can try to. I think there's a lawsuit pending. Or actually a judge might have just reinstated it. But they can try to because they have broad political discretion to decide who is and isn't and shouldn't be granted a visa.
Through this episode and the last one, the Wong Kim arc, and Abrego Garcia, all these stories, I have become very strongly in favor of immigration reform myself. So this is fascinating.
What's
stuff,
so folks. Interesting is that there has not been substantial immigration reform for like 20 years.
I believe it. Yeah. This is it's throughout my memory, it's always been messy. And I think wrong.
Yeah.
Just doesn't jive with me and what I perceive as justice.
This was my first in-depth investigation of an active case. Mm-hmm. Let me know how I did.
Yeah.
I'm worried I stumble over my words a little bit at the first half of the show, but please, we would love to hear your analysis. Mm-hmm. We'd love to hear if you think I got it right. If mm-hmm. we got it wrong, tag us on our socials.
Yeah,
we are,
tell us.
Yeah, there's a lot of activity. Send us an email at gossipwithoutprejudice.com.
Ooh,
no, that's not correct. gossipwithoutprejudice@gmail.com.
There you go.
Go to gossipwithoutprejudice.com if you want to support the show. Pledge as little as $5 keeps the lights on. Thank you to our sponsors, Quimby Bar Prep and Hemet Law. Bar Prep, MPRE, good attorneys in Washington. You've all heard the pitch before.
Oh, yeah.
But we will be in touch very soon, guys. Thank you so much for listening for another week.
Thank you. We love you. Goodbye.